People do amazing things every day, and yet most of us feel like we can't do our taxes ourselves. That doesn't make any sense. TurboTax believes that with the right tools and encouragement, people can do anything. Yes, even taxes. And with TurboTax Live, you have access to CPAs on demand who are available even on nights and weekends to answer your questions or give you advice to help make sure you do your taxes right and get your best possible refund. TurboTax. All people are tax people.
Hey everybody, welcome back to From Complex to Queens, Amazing Avenues Minor League Podcast. I'm Steve Sipa, and I'm joined by Lucas, Ken, and Thomas. How is everyone doing this week?
All right.
Yeah, pretty good.
Quarantine person can.
That's true.
I feel like I am the only person in the world actually enjoying this.
I thought I'd like it. I mean, when you say like, hey, you can just stay at home for a while and get paid, I was like, that sounds sweet. And the novelty kind of ran off like maybe week two.
Oh, dude, this is my freaking dream life. Like, I don't have to talk to anyone in person. I get to wake up at noon and stay up till 5 in the morning and no one cares. It's great.
It's more like the option of going outside was the nicest part.
Sure.
It's that I would do this by choice, but it feels less cool because it's not by choice.
It's like your cat asking you to open the door. It's like, well, now the door's open. Now you opened it. I don't want to go outside.
Yeah, exactly. I just wanted it open.
Yeah, screw you.
Speaking of cats, has Pepito been going out?
Yes.
I hope not.
It was his birthday recently, too.
Oh, that's good.
Pepito can handle himself.
I would hope so, after all this time. All right, well, speaking of being quarantined, I was reading that a bunch of TV shows are basically going to be having abbreviated seasons because of all the stuff going on with coronavirus, and starting this week, more or less, a bunch of shows are going to start to shift to their finales. So I was looking at a list of 50 best season finales according to whoever, BuzzFeed maybe, I don't know, but I picked these three kind of at random. I was cheating a little bit. But of these season finales, which ones are we going to, what are we going to promote, what are we going to extend, and what are we going to trade from the list of The Sopranos season finale? Oh, excuse me, the series finale.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah. Futurama series finale.
Which one?
The last to the actual.
The Not the Fox cancellation, the Comedy Central.
No, Comedy Central.
Okay. Yep.
And the Roseanne series finale.
Wasn't the series finale for that her tweeting something racist while on Ambien and then the show getting canceled?
Technically. I'm talking the original. Like, the original airing.
Wasn't
the
it,
original series.
It's something goofy. Like, it was like like it was a novel or something, and she won the lottery. It was something really strange. Like, they went in a totally weird direction for a show that was, like, kind of grounded the whole time.
Yep.
Weird.
Yeah, it really was.
I don't know the reason why, but yeah, it's the last season was basically Roseanne and her family won the lotto. So they went from being blue-collar workers that are, you know, down on their luck a lot to flying on private jets with princes and all kinds of wacky stuff. And then in the last scene, basically Roseanne said that it was all a lie. It was all just part of like a book that she was writing, and that they were even more worse on their luck because Dan, the John Goodman character, the father, he died. And, you know, that was their main source of income.
That's so weird.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really strange.
I don't know why they went completely off the wall in the last season.
So I also need to say something that I'm sure will earn me ridicule, given that I am born in New York and grew up in New Jersey.
You never saw The Sopranos, did you?
Never saw The Sopranos.
Never seen Lucas, The Sopranos. I'm actually in the same boat, so.
Yeah. I have a friend who just watched it in quarantine and said it was very good, and I just have no interest in it. It's just not my kind of show. Well, I'm also the person who thinks that Breaking Bad is super overrated, so.
I can agree with that.
Anyway, there's only one correct answer here. Like, the Futurama series finale is perfect, as were the first two series finales when they got canceled the first two times. Like, Futurama is as close to a perfect comedy show as I think exists. So, I am extending that one. And, I don't know, promote the Sopranos one because it made people angry and I found that amusing. And then Roseanne is kind of an asshole anyway, so trade it.
Yeah, you got to trade the Roseanne finale because it's absurd.
I don't know if I've seen any of these three, so
Ken, I guess what are you doing with your life?
I never watched the new Futurama episodes. Roseanne was never my fig.
Let's back up then. Did you see the first series finale, like the opera episode, where
I think so,
where Fry like. Trades somehow devil gets hands. The devil's hands and then writes a holophoner opera.
Oh, that episode's so good.
With the devil went down to Georgia, right?
Yeah, like that kind of stick.
Where they have the fiddle contest at the end.
No, that's a different episode with the robot devil. I think that's in season two. That's when Bender finds robot religion and then immediately
that's a great episode. It,
and then Leela tries to play the golden fiddle and just beats the devil over the head. I have an almost
goddamn like show is good
knowledge of Futurama, which is useless, unfortunately. Futurama's great. You should watch Futurama.
It's really good.
It is.
They really did nail like finales too, because they got multiple shots at it.
And yep.
They did it right every time.
I mean, the first one might honestly be my favorite. Like, everyone leaving the opera hall when he loses the devil's hands and Leela sitting back for him to just play the simple final melody is just, it's like perfect. It's so perfect.
Yeah, it really is.
Everything about Futurama kind of is perfect.
Except fucking Jurassic Bark.
Well, I mean, they knew what they were setting out to accomplish and they succeeded.
I never rewatched Jurassic Park.
No. There are some things that I just will not do. I will not watch, like we talked about a few weeks ago, I will not watch Land Before Time. And I will not watch Jurassic Park.
I never watched Land Before Time. But you're talking about Littlefoot's mother dying, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I've seen the memes. I've acquired the knowledge through the memes.
It is traumatic. All right, so I wanted to start out this week by just highlighting all of the good that Jeremy Wolf and the More Than Baseball Foundation has been doing over the last month or so. Major League Baseball pledged to continue paying their players through spring training, and now they extended that a little bit since, obviously, this is going to continue past when spring training ended. But that $400 a week that they're giving players is still completely inadequate, and there's a lot of loopholes that players are basically getting gypped out of having any compensation. The biggest one being that anyone staying at the team complexes for whatever reason aren't eligible, and the majority of, you know, young foreign rookies who were not able to go back home are the ones that are staying at the complexes, and those are the ones that probably need the money the most since they're younger individuals in a country that's brand new to them. But in my interview with him a couple of weeks ago, I wanted to ask Jeremy something, but I ended up scrapping it, the question, because A, I couldn't think of a good way to word it, and B, I didn't want to accidentally badmouth anyone or cause any problems. But I wanted to ask him why he thought majority of the players kind of forget about their peers and friends in the minors once they make it. You hear a lot of times about all those quotes that major league players give, you know, it gives players, you know, the struggle in the minors gives players an incentive to try harder and make it.
Calm down, they're out of Eaton.
Yeah.
That's what it was. I, I was trying to think of who said it, but I remember there was one specific person who was like, it's actually good.
Yeah. That it, I mean, obviously we don't know what goes on behind the scenes, but in public, you know, very rare do you hear major leaguers advocating for the guys in the minors, or very rare do you hear them, you know, helping guys out and stuff like that. And obviously it's unfortunate that owners still won't pick, they still won't pick up that super low hanging PR fruit and do more than the bare minimum to take care of their employees. But given all the stuff that's going on now, we're hearing some pretty nice stories about big leaguers taking the time to help out, you know, minor leaguers. Biggest story, I guess, are Shinshu Chu. He's basically independently donating $1,000 to all the minor leaguers in the Rangers system because he remembers how tough it was to play in the minor leagues and basically having to, you know, allocate the couple of dollars that he was given for food or diapers, you know, kind of two necessities, and having to strategically pick and choose when he ate so that his kid could have diapers. I mean, a shitty situation to find yourself in. And then Adam Wainwright.
Was that a pun, Steve?
No, it actually wasn't, but... Adam Wainwright donated $250,000 to More Than Baseball. Daniel Murphy donated $100,000. And then on top of that, you have all the donations that people have been making independently over the last couple of months. And it's good that, you know, these guys aren't being forgotten about. It shouldn't have to come to random strangers taking care of them. But,
yeah.
I mean, that's America, I guess, where you gotta have GoFundMes to be able to raise the money to treat your very, you know, treatable cancer. But
it's also, like, it's crazy that, like, yes, these players are millionaires, like, a lot of them are, and they, like, Shinshu Chu could do this, and it's not, like, a crazy amount of money to him, but also, why is it his responsibility when the Texas Rangers are like a billion-dollar corporate. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, like the millionaires are doing the right thing, and that's good. But also, there's people who have even more money who could be doing even more.
It's like, so that's like an order of magnitude, and two in some cases. Like, Chu got a, how much did the Rangers pay him? Like $140 million. So, like,
yeah, I believe, yeah,
he's in the nine digits. But I don't think Murphy's broken nine digits or. Like, so it's somewhere between one and three orders of magnitude less wealthy than the owners. So why the hell are the players having to do this?
Yeah. And it's like that in other sports, too. Like, you see a lot of basketball players are donating to the arenas to help pay for the workers and stuff like that. And it's like, well, there's owners who could be doing that as well.
Freaking Joel Embiid was donating to the Sixers workers while Josh Harris, who owns the team, was like, yeah, we're going to fire all of them.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Are you kidding me?
Exactly.
Ronaldo, I don't know anything about whether his team did anything. I don't even know what team he plays for, but he donated to some of the workers, I believe.
It's just, I don't know. I talk about this with my sister when we talk about politics and things. And human nature. I just don't really understand. Like, you are so rich that it's a pittance. And the money that you're spending would buy you better PR, which is ultimately more valuable than your couple of million dollars, which you're going to make back in a year, you know, or probably even less. Like, I don't know. Are these super rich and wealthy people so insulated from the world that just the basic morals and everything that we have doesn't apply to them? Like, I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either. It's also just like, yeah, I don't know. It always leaves me like speechless a little bit when you think about it, because like, you think about the Bruins owner, who is like one of the richest people in the world, and he's like being annoying about trying to pay his workers and stuff. And it's like, why be like that? Like, I don't even understand, like, the point of hoarding your money to that degree. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
It just, it is literally a mindset that is just completely foreign, that I just cannot understand. And I don't know.
I've seen some people, like, raise the point that lots of these billionaires don't have as many liquid assets as you would assume, right? Because, oh, I own a $3 billion franchise, but that doesn't mean I have $3 billion in cash on hand. But at the same time, you have this giant asset to fall back on. Like, you can borrow against it and pay it back. And like, it's very easy to still let you, if you don't have to start selling your team, you can borrow against it and then pay back later. It's not exactly rocket science.
And, like, the team isn't going to disintegrate because this happens. Like, there's going to be sports.
You're not even going to lose ownership. Like, you're not going to lose anything. Like, you're just going to say, I own a $5 billion team. I want to borrow a ton of money to give to people, and I'll pay you back because I own a $5 billion team.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
That prints money.
I just don't see how their PR people don't say to them, this is better for you. Like, I'm just a nobody. I have no education in PR. I have no education in anything relevant to the field of any kind of business. But, I mean, when you see things on Twitter, like this guy donated a small amount of money relative to their total net worth. You know, Shin Chu Chu donated everyone $1,000. It's going to come out to $100,000, let's say, whatever. Like, everyone's like, wow, awesome, that's great. Shin Chu Chu, awesome. A major league ball club can do that and get that same amount of positive feedback, and that the sum just means less to them than it does to the sum that Shin Chu Chu has been giving to these players.
Was it since we're mentioning the Rangers, didn't they all their execs took big pay cuts, I believe, in the short term? Or maybe that was another team. I'll look real quick. So we should at least give them credit for that if that's true. But
all right, good. So they're not making money while the rest of their employees won't be either. Like,
yeah, the execs took a temporary pay cut. So, I mean, good on them.
It's like, that's the thing. They can literally do the bare minimum and get praised for doing the bare minimum. And they're barely even doing that. It's just such a crazy worldview to have. I don't know. But wherever the money is coming from, it's good that a lot of these guys are being taken care of. So that's good.
Yeah, I mean, good on Shin Chu Chu.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Who else? Even Daniel Murphy, who, I mean, historically has had some pretty shitty opinions about things. But, like... Yeah. We can recognize that people have bad opinions and also do good things at the same time. So, like, thanks, Daniel Murphy.
Yep. All right. So we'll shift things a little bit now. And we got an email, and it went straight to spam for whatever reason, and I didn't notice it, but our email's been getting bombarded by spam lately, so I was emptying it. And I found this errant email. It is from Richard in Medellin, Colombia. And I'm just kind of cutting and pasting it here. But basically the meat of his email is that, quote, I believe in math, so I take the analytics seriously, though not as my end all, because having watched baseball for 45 or so years, I also believe in things like heart, desire, and the will to win. The truth? I don't doubt you know a lot about baseball, but all you do is talk about measurables and mechanics. What about the rest? Who is this guy and what are his intangibles? Why and how was he successful or unsuccessful? These are people and their non-measurables matter. I know it's not the case with your group, but it gives me the impression that you don't bother to actually watch games. You just review the numbers afterwards. End quote. So this is a good segue to talk about high school baseball and college baseball and why we say the numbers don't really matter. And obviously I'll preface that by saying that you want a player to do better. You want a player to put up better numbers rather than bad ones. But in the end, evaluators and scouts are looking at and they're looking for skills rather than results. Results being the things that happen, and then skills being things that cause the results and can be, you know, replicated in the future. And for the record, we do watch games, and MILB TV is very reasonable. You get plenty of games over the course of the summer for, I think, $49 for the entire season.
Yeah,
which is, it's a bargain, really. And then you get everything archived. So we do watch the games, but that is neither here nor there. But, you know, when it comes to high school baseball and the numbers, you see a lot of variance because the literal field has a lot of, you know, talent variance. There are places like private baseball academies, like IMG Academy. I think Puerto Rico's is Carlos Beltran Academy. I don't know if that's the name or, you know, it's run by him. But, you know, there are prep schools that have reputations when it comes to player development, and parents send their kids to these schools so that they could develop their baseball skills specifically. But by and large, you know, you attend the school that you're zoned for. And if a school is going to have a baseball team, the coach picks the 25 or whatever the number is in high school baseball. He picks those kids that are the best. And in some cases, you have kids that might not actually be particularly good, but that's all he's got. That's where you see places that have warm weather have a comparative advantage over cold weather states. Because, you know, California, the Southwest and the South, they could play year round. And coaches are able to pick kids that are always playing and are, you know, more refined as opposed to colder Midwest states, New England over here, you know, where you can't play when it's freezing out.
I mean, Trout probably fell because of that, being in Jersey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And also, like, the level of competition is worse.
Yes. I mean, basically, I tried out for baseball in high school, and I never really pursued it much because my academic stuff, I was in marching band. Yeah, I was looking at track, too, at the time. Like, I didn't really have the time. But for the couple of weeks involved, I was, like, the practice bench warmer person on the second string team. And I still don't have any real baseball skill, but I had even less then. And, you know, if I didn't belong anywhere near an actual team, but the fact that I was able to get onto even being on like a practice squad as a bench warmer guy is, you know, telling, because that's what the coach had to work with.
Yeah, I get you.
You know, in some high school super baseball academy, at the IMG Academy, they would have laughed me out of the building. And in theory, there's some school out there in like middle of nowhere Montana where maybe that me would have been the best player, which is really scary, I guess.
I mean, wasn't it when Nimmo was getting...
Nimmo didn't have a high school baseball
team. Didn't even have a high school baseball team?
Yeah. Nope.
So, like...
Yeah, he, like, built a batting cage in his barn, if I remember. That was, like, the anecdote I remember.
And played a lot of American Legion ball.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right.
Played travel ball because he literally didn't have another option to play. So,
what pick was he? Let's go look at that draft real quick. That was 2012?
I want to say 11.
2012 MLB draft.
2011 he was.
You are right.
Oh, okay.
Yes, it was 2011. Because 2012 was Gavin Sheets. Yeah, that didn't work out so well, did it?
No.
Not great.
Honestly, actually, I'm not sure how much higher he would have gone. There are a lot of good players taken in front of him. That year went Cole, yeah, Holtzen, who blew out his shoulder, Bauer, Bundy, oh, Bubba Starling.
He was big at the time.
Yeah, he was.
Anthony Rendon, Archie Bradley, Lindor, Baez, Spangenberg, oof, George Springer, Taylor Youngman, and then Brandon Nimmo. So who knows? Like, maybe he would have been considered up there with Starling had there been more data, right? Like,
yeah.
I definitely was not as tuned in at the time, so I don't remember what the narrative is, but I think it's probably fair to say his stock was a bit lower because he just didn't play.
Mm-hmm. Understandably so. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Like, it's legitimately risky what the Mets did to, like, put in a first round pick on a dude who, like, played travel ball as his most competitive competition. Mm-hmm. It's really trusting your scouting, which is watching the games and seeing him in these in showcases and his games that he was playing, to really be like, he would be good anywhere. He just happens to be in Wyoming.
Yeah, Nimmo is a very good example of that, is that the numbers don't matter because they literally were not numbers.
And, like, I'm sure, like, if there was high school baseball in Wyoming, he would have hit 800. Because, oh, yeah. Like,
his on-base percentage would have been, like, infinite.
He would have never gotten out. He might have gotten, like, out once every four games because he lined out to the center fielder, and the center fielder.
Isn't the altitude also very high in Wyoming?
Probably.
Wyoming, I don't know.
Altitude. 6,700 feet, so it's a mile high. Yeah, it's pretty high.
There you go.
Yeah, so Brandon Nimmo would have OPS'd like 3,000 or something.
It would have been disgusting. That's true.
He might have been the first overall pick.
Like, he would have either ignored all the garbage outside the zone, because high school pitchers can't throw strikes, or just launched the garbage that actually was in the zone 3,000 feet.
Why not both?
Right, it's one or the other. You're going to throw me a strike, and I'm going to hit it to the moon, or I'm just not going to swing at anything else because I have, a 99th percentile eye at the plate.
It's actually good that they don't have high school baseball for him.
Yeah, for real. That's a new market in inefficiency, is drafting guys who don't have high school baseball.
Yeah.
I mean, it seems like it worked with Jared Kelnick.
That's true, too.
A
guy with no high school baseball experience and immediately became, you know, what is he, like a top 20 prospect in baseball?
Yep.
Higher, I think. Yeah, probably. Had an 8 or
9. Probably, yeah.
That's like being conservative.
I do have a counter argument here, however, which should surprise no one since I'm the stat junkie here. I can't really argue with the idea that the numbers we have in high school and college are pretty close to useless, if not totally useless. I still think you can glean some things, at least from college numbers, though not a ton. I think the bigger problem is that we're just not measuring the correct things, right? Like, we're measuring raw stats in environments with wildly varying ballparks, altitudes, and most importantly, level of competition, right? So I think if we actually measured some of the right things, we could use stats to evaluate these players more accurately. And I think StatCast is definitely flawed and people misuse it. Like, that's definitely true. But I think it's also exciting to a lot of people because it's a step in the direction of getting at the actual fundamental aspects of a baseball player, right? Like, you put it another way, if you're counting average or OPS or what have you, you're kind of looking at the atoms of a baseball player. But if you were instead evaluating things like, okay, how fast is your bat actually moving? What sort of hand-eye coordination do you have? How good is your vision, just in a raw sense? Then you're getting at sort of the fundamental particles of being a baseball player, to use a physics analogy here, right? You're asking what underlying physical skills are essential to being good, and how good are you at them? Rather than saying, oh, well, you hit 800 off some high school pitcher, so you're good.
Yep, that is.
So
that is
you're basically talking about quantifying scouting.
Yeah, and I think I think that it's something that the technology exists to do, perhaps, and perhaps not in an optimum state. Like, it would obviously need refinement, but I'm fairly confident that if some team invested the R&D money, both in terms of developing the technology and hiring the right, you essentially need medical experts at that point, or biomechanical experts, vision experts. I'm pretty sure you could pull off a system that does this, like understand the neurology of a good baseball player, understand the raw physical skills of a good baseball player. Now, some of the other intangible stuff, like work ethic, still matters, but ultimately that always just seems to be an excuse to say someone who's hitting 250 in double A on their third time around is good.
Yeah. Right? That stuff matters, but I feel like it matters. I don't want to...
It only matters if it matters.
Yeah, like, it matters because, like, having a good clubhouse is better than having a bad one, but also 25 assholes who are as good as Mike Trout will be the best team in the league. You know? Like
he's
if they all...
asshole. He's our
so
asshole.
Where
if
I
they
like
all
to
hate
think
each
of...
other, it doesn't matter. Because it just it depends on how good you are at that point.
Like, I think intangibles and things like that matter more about maximizing talent.
Yeah,
sure.
For example, like Nimmo is actually a good example of that, where like, you know, he doesn't really have all that much power relative to what you'd think, but it plays up a lot because he's so selective and he gets on base so much because he's got a very, very good approach to the game. And
I think it's also,
you know, has some of the soft skills. You
yeah,
know?
He like works his ass off. Very.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right. Yeah. He's a leader of men, and, you know.
But also, he's good enough to be an MLB player.
Right.
And, like, there's plenty
exactly.
of leaders of men who work their asses off who just aren't. And at some point, like, the numbers won't lie.
I mean, like, the actual, like, lower limit of this is probably, like, Louis Guillaume, who gets every little bit of talent out of himself because he's such a hard worker and such... should I explain this? So good at all of the soft things that only come with, you know, playing baseball 24/7 your entire life.
I think the flip side of that, you also have to recognize that a lot of the people who get labeled for having quote unquote bad makeup, like I'm very rarely the person to pull out a race card on anything, but it's so often just a dog whistle for. This dude isn't a gritty white guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I almost never ding people for that. I assume the only person I think I've ever really dung for something like that was Travis d'Arnaud. I don't
really?
Know why. Yeah. I always got the impression that he was just like the most talented kid in the room.
Really? Okay.
But like was always like a step away from superstardom just because of, you know, either not, I don't want to say not working, but like lacking some of the soft skills. Does that make sense?
I mean, that might be fair. I mean, I definitely don't remember too many anecdotes about d'Arnaud. Like the one that always pops to mind first for me is Josh Naylor. Like the dude straight up stabbed one of his teammates in the minor leagues because it was just a prank, bro.
Yeah. Like you can't really argue that one away.
That's the kind of shit that's bad. But a lot of the time it's just like, oh, it looks like he's, people say this about Dom Smith. Right? Like, and there might be some truth to him not doing a good job of managing his weight in the minors, but there are other factors that we've discussed at length about, like, poor minor league conditions and no food, and he might just have a bad metabolism. So,
one of the ones that always... Sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm done. Like, my point
one
is
of the,
just...
He's not a Met, but the Manny Machado stuff, like, he's kind of a hothead, but, like, I don't think he's, like,
but he's
cancer.
Like, yeah, and literally the most talented player money can buy. Like,
exactly. And, like, people were knocking him for, like, when him and Harper were free agents at the same time, like, Harper does the same things that Machado does. Like, but I don't feel like Harper ever got that negative publicity from it, and Machado does. So, like, I feel like people, like, embrace Harper for that stuff, and they push a guy like Machado away for the same things.
I'm not sure that's fair to Harper, though. Like, Machado threw a bat at a dude and, like, stepped on first baseman's ankles multiple times.
I think he threw a bat at an umpire.
He tried to throw a bat his bat at Francisco Abad because, like, Abad threw at him, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Was it Abad? Some Oakland A's pitcher.
That's
like Machado did some shitty things and apologized. And I don't think your overall point is wrong, but I do think there were some legitimate criticisms of Machado.
No, that's fair. He's just like, I feel like a very extreme example of it, where people were like, I don't want to pay him all that money, but I'm like, he's really good, so you should. Yeah. Like, bringing him into the locker room isn't going to be like a net negative.
Mm-hmm. I've never gotten the complaints about guys who are hotheads, right? Like, do you want someone who doesn't care?
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't you rather see someone who gets frustrated when they're not playing well or when their team's not winning?
I mean, my favorite with that is Jeff McNeil, who every time he doesn't get a hit, you know, slams his bat down and screams.
It's like, good. I want you to care.
It always makes me laugh because he's just so mad at it. And, like, I understand, but it's like, I feel like he doesn't understand that it's a game of failure and he expects to hit 1,000 with.
I mean, if I had that bat control.
Oh, no, for sure.
See, you raise a good point, though, because that's always, that's the anecdote that comes up in Moneyball, that Billy Beane didn't know how to fail. And who knows if that's actually the reason, like, maybe he just wasn't as good as we thought. But I think the concept there is fair, that if you've never failed and you can't handle failure, like, that's another one of these soft skills that probably matters.
Yeah, it's like Jeff McNeil gets frustrated, but, you know, he doesn't let it carry over.
Right. It's not like he carries it into the field or just starts hacking at everything because he's like, oh, I got to make up.
Or like destroys a water cooler every time he strikes out.
Right.
That we know of.
There's a balance.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah, in terms of baseball passion and teachability and intangible things like that, I had two kind of examples that happened more or less around the same time. One guy that's the good is Pete Alonso.
That's a good one.
Day one, you know, I was pretty high on him. A lot of people were not as high because, you know, when coming out of the draft, the swing was a bit noisy. There were some holes, but he was a super teachable guy. And he worked on his swing. He refined the swing. He worked on stuff that needed to be done. And now look at him. He is, you know, a superstar.
Yeah. Defense too.
Yeah, defense too. I mean, I saw some pretty bad. I don't know. I still don't really know how to describe his defense because he would make a bad play and then make like a spectacular play back to back. So.
Yeah.
But on the other side now of like that intangible teachability kind of thing that is an important thing that scouts are going to look at a guy like Seth Romero, all the talent in the world, you know, a really polished left-hander with, you know, a good fastball, good slider, good changeup, good everything, picked at 25. He probably could have been picked at like 10, 15, but he was just a dick. He literally got himself kicked off his team for not practicing, for smoking weed, getting into fights, all that kind of stuff. After the Nats drafted him, he missed time, same kind of stuff.
And that's the point where the off the field stuff is obviously negative. Like when it's getting to the point where you're getting kicked off your high school team because you're an asshole and no one wants to hang out with you or no one wants to be with or like whatever you're doing, like that's when it's quantifiable too, because I don't know when you hear a dude has a bad attitude, like we don't know that because we don't see it and we're not there, so it's hard for me to quantify it in terms of how it affects a guy in the clubhouse, because a guy could be an asshole in the clubhouse and also you could live with it. But some people you can't because it's too much.
All right, look at the 86 Mets.
Yeah. No, for real, yeah.
A bunch of psychos. I mean, I think we've perhaps missed the best example of this, and that might be Mike Trout. Right? Like, for the first 4 or 5 years of his career, Mike Trout came back in the spring every time it was better at something. It's like, all right, well, you're like a 4.5 to a player, but your arm's not the best. Comes back and has a top tier arm. Yeah, well, you can do that, but you still swing and miss a lot up in the zone. Comes back the next year as the best high fastball hitter in baseball. It's like, so that's a good example of another guy who, I mean, obviously is uber talented to a degree that is perhaps a once in a lifetime level, but also has worked his ass off to say I could be a little better and get a little better each time and never be satisfied until he's. And you just never be satisfied, period, basically. Please get him a team so he can win a World Series. Please.
I can't wait till he's a Met at 38.
No. Oh, that's well, so sad.
He'll still be putting up like 4 WAR seasons.
Yeah. Have you ever read the? I'm assuming that you have the FanGraphs article about Mike Trout basically beating Barry Bonds and accruing the most WAR in baseball history.
Yeah.
And they kind of plotted out how he would be able to do that. So, yeah, in his age 38 season, he'd be with the Mets. Basically, he'd be like a Dave Kingman kind of guy.
I'll take it.
Sign me up for that.
Yeah.
I saw a tweet about, like, 9 win seasons over the last 5 years or something, and there's only been 10, and he has 6 of them. Or 6 over the last decade. Some number like that. It's like, this is absurd.
Yeah. He makes no sense.
His lowest WAR season was 6.8, and that's only because he missed 100 plate appearances, because he missed 50 games.
Lucas, prorate that out to a full season.
I should be able to do that in my head, but I can't.
What season was that?
That was 2017.
It would be about 9, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it'd be roughly another 9 win season if he got his usual number of games.
And if you miss 50 games, you're missing about a third of the season, which means... Yeah. If you're at 6, then you would be on the pace for 9.
He's so close to greatness. This close. This close.
But yeah, so the greatest players there you can see are, you know, the pattern. They're not satisfied. They're always working to get better.
You want sorry to interrupt Steve, but one last good example from another sport, and this will probably piss a lot of people off in our target demographic, but Tom Brady. Right, like Tom Brady is not a great athlete. We've all seen that hilarious combine video where he can't run at all. But the stories of his manic work ethic and how seriously he takes every part of his practice are like legendary at this point. Right, like so he's always studying, always working to get better to a degree that's objectively insane. But that's soft skill that's the soft skill we're talking about.
And that's also something like you don't know that until he's in your building.
Yeah.
Like at Michigan, when he was struggling to like get the starting job, he was probably the same way, but it just wasn't there yet. And when you watch the tape and you look at the numbers, you can't tell, but you also can't assume that a guy is going to be Tom Brady and have that type of work ethic. You have to balance both.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He was physically a better quarterback in his early 30s than his 20s, which is insane.
Yeah,
for me, one of the big things when we talk about makeup, it's like, does this person understand what it means to be a professional, you know? In a similar way to what you're talking about with Brady, where like, do they understand that being in the top 1% of talent isn't necessarily enough?
Man, that it really puts things in perspective.
Mm-hmm.
That probably is the most important underlying kind of intangible, is like drive or whatever you want to call it, because then that branches out into a bunch of different things that then you can go on improving. We talked about high school baseball before. When it comes to college baseball now, I think stats still aren't really the be-all end-all. You're still looking at all those underlying skills and everything like that. And when you do look at stats, it's important to keep in mind that college baseball is almost like a different sport if you think about it. You know, colleges make a lot of money off of baseball. Their main objective is to win. So that means things like UConn grinding players into the ground. So that means like Stanford teaching players to win.
Stanford ruining literally every hitter that comes through their program ever.
Yeah.
Just so they could win at their level and then whatever happens
next. Just so they can ping bullshit singles to the opposite field constantly with metal bats.
Right. And we'll add asterisks to both of those claims because not every player to go to UConn or Stanford is unprepared or anything like that. But yeah, it's kind of helpful to think about college sports as different sports. Well, in terms of baseball anyway, I don't really know about other sports, but it's important to, you know, keep in mind college baseball is almost like a different game than regular baseball. We were talking about last week with the metal bat. That makes a huge difference. Smaller fields and the metal bat means you can just mash home runs. You know, yeah. David Thompson, 19 home runs in his junior year, but power's, you know, not really his thing.
As we've seen the last couple of years, the balls probably matter a lot too.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like, I don't even know where they get their balls.
Who knows what's going on with that?
So I do think college stats are meaningful in a lot of ways, but I do have some an interesting way to sort of illustrate the difference, or how the stats don't entirely matter. So I'm going to read a stat line, two stat lines, one of which is Andrew Vaughn, and then try to guess the other one.
Okay.
So this is Andrew Vaughn's best season. 402, 531, 819.
Is that his slugging, or that's his slugging? Right?
That's his triple slash, yeah. 1350 OPS.
That's fucking disgusting. That's so absurd.
Mystery player. 408, 520, 807, 1327 OPS in his best season.
All right, you got to give us some hints here, right?
Yeah, like, give us some hints.
Did this player make the major leagues?
No, not yet.
Were they a notable prospect at draft time?
At draft time, yes. We'll do a few hints, I guess. Let me keep looking at the Baseball Cube page. He was a top 15 pick.
Okay.
Top 15. Will Craig. Well, I was getting Will Craig or something, but he was later in the round.
Mm-hmm. College position player. I'm afraid if I give the draft, it's going to give it away.
Hmm.
Whatever. 2013 draft. Top 15 pick.
2013 draft. All right, let me think. Who was 2013? That was the year we took Dom, right?
Yep.
So who did we? Who did? I was. What?
You said top 15 pick, right?
Yep. College position player.
This is tough.
There's really catcher. We're not going to consider a position player. So there's really one, two. Three.
Wasn't four. Austin Meadows in that draft, but he was a high
school. He was a high school, yeah.
High school.
There's like five candidates.
Chris Bryant was obviously good, and he's made the major, so it's not that.
It's not Chris Bryant, yeah.
Yeah. Was that the dude that the Marlins traded to the Astros? The
Colin Moran is one of the five, yes, but it's not him. He also made the big leagues briefly, I think.
That's true.
He's had a few cups of coffee. It's DJ Peterson.
He's like a
DJ Peterson. That was 2013.
Who was a big deal. Forgot about at the that time guy. Of the draft for being like a Kyle Schwarber type, you know, big time power, and really hasn't mashed. But basically, had the same season Andrew Vaughn had in his best season at, you know, Berkeley. Although he was at New Mexico University, New Mexico. So, you know, not as good a conference. A lot of the sort of noise, or a lot of the noise we're talking about, statistical noise, is at play there.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely a big difference. I mean, baseball levels of talent are all over the place, but big difference between Mountain West and Pac-12.
Yeah, true.
The Pac-12 has a lot of blue chip programs in it. I don't think I could name a single other school in the Mountain West. I mean, you make a good point though. Like, and I think it gets back to we're measuring the wrong things, right? If we can't judge these statistics because the level of play and the run environments are so all over the place. But if we were actually judging his mental acuity, his visual, what's the word I'm looking for? Accuracy of his vision, the details of his hand-eye coordination. If you could come up with assays for all of this, perhaps you could measure them in some meaningful way. But since we don't have that tech, you'd still need to scout them.
This roster for the 2013 University of New Mexico team is pretty wild.
Uh-huh. Go ahead.
Sam Haggerty was a freshman starting infielder.
Okay.
Mitch Garver.
Wow.
Was the catcher as a senior.
The weirdest guy you'd ever never expect to take DeGrom deep twice in one game.
Yep. Those are really the only two, but two big leaguers, and DJ Peterson was not one of them.
Peterson's playing in Mexico now, apparently. Tigres de Quintana Roo of the Mexican League.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm not playing now, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, so basically, there's a lot of variance in high school, especially, but like we've been saying, even college ball. And yeah, the basic baseball numbers are not the things to look at. You want to look at the kind of intangibles, and you want to look at the kind of more scientific-y things that can be scouted.
I have one final point, I think, that most of these stats, like we've said, are meaningless to the point where even I probably don't look at most of them. The one thing I will almost always look at is just their strikeout to walk ratio, right? Because that's probably the closest to a fundamental measurement we currently have for most of these guys, right? Like, I don't really care how many home runs you hit, though it's notable. I don't care what your batting average is. I want to try to get an understanding of what your eye at the plate is.
And to bring it back to when we were talking about Nimmo before, I probably underrated him for a while he was like first coming onto the scene as a Met and when he broke out, because I was just kind of like, oh yeah, he looks like he could hit, but I don't know if it's going to be sustainable. But when you're looking at the pitches that he looks at and gets into so many hitters counts that he gets into and waits on only swinging at really pitches that you want to swing at, like, it's going to make you a better hitter, even though you don't really think of it that way, I think, like, on its surface. But he's probably only swinging at pitches that are like hitters pitches to swing at, and he's not swinging at garbage all the time. And like McNeil swings at everything, but that's just because he has elite hand-eye coordination and he can make contact with all that stuff. But not everyone has that. So like, I think that's something that makes Nimmo a little better than he should. Like, if he just had a regular eye, I think he would be like a kind of regular player, if that makes sense.
Probably right.
Nimmo's kind of just an outlier when it comes to plate discipline. Like,
he's like the extreme example. Like,
I remember, and I've probably told this story on the pod before, but I remember seeing him. My cousin got really, really good tickets early in the 2018 season, right after Nimmo came back up. And I remember turning to him and saying, like, I don't know if this kid's going to make enough contact, but he takes a hell of an at-bat.
Yeah.
And it's kind of exactly what we're talking about, where like he gets every bit of talent out of himself because of just an extreme skill that is very difficult to quantify.
The only time Nimmo didn't walk at least 14% of the time at any level where he had significant exposure was his first dip into AA in 2014 and his first dip into AAA in 2016. Every other level, every other iteration, like, it's insane.
It's funny that his first dip in the majors, he was just like, yeah, I'll take all these pitches from major league starters. It's fine.
Like, there's probably only two or three guys with as good an eye in baseball. And one of them is Joey Votto.
Yeah.
I mean, last year
he walked, I think, in like a down season for him, he walked, I think, like 18% of the time.
And it makes him semi-usable when he's slumping. Like,
exactly. Like, oh, he was dreadful for most of the year and still had an OP a WRC plus of over, I think it was like 114 or something.
Yep. Because
like that'll play.
with a what did he have, a bulging disc in his neck or
yeah. I always like to say not being able to turn his head.
He couldn't move his head to one side of his body and he's walking 14% of the time in the majors. Like,
I have a headache. I don't want to get off my couch.
And that's probably another, like, intangible, like, the ability to do that.
Absolutely.
Go beyond pain.
It's true. Like,
yeah, no, it is.
And it's obviously in contact sports, it's probably a bigger deal because, like, a little bump and bruise and you're not sitting out from it. But Nimmo was usable in a season where he needed, like, neck surgery or whatever it was.
In conclusion, we all love Brandon Nimmo.
Yep.
And if they ever trade him for something stupid, I'll be extremely sad.
Like every year they almost do, and then the last second they're like, "Nah, we're good."
They're trading him for Real Muto, and I was like, "Please, no, don't do this."
Before we end with Brandon Nimmo hit .221 last season. How many players had a higher on base percentage than him?
Oh, probably like 10.
Six.
Wow. Well, no, 30, but.
Okay, well.
He had that's the lowest average among any of them.
Probably by a lot.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Brandon Nimmo's pretty good. All right, if anyone has any questions, comments, whatever, you could send us an email at our email address, but do not send us spam from complexthequeens@gmail.com. You could follow us on Twitter, and I guess you could send us spam there, because a lot of Twitter is spam.
That's all Twitter is. Twitter is just an endless stream of spam.
I am at Steve Slipa. Lucas is at ElVlahos343. Ken is at Ken1191. And Thomas is at SadMetSeason, SZN. Subscribe to the podcast, wherever you get your podcast from. Rate and review it, please. Leave a comment. It would be nice, too. And obviously, thank you for listening. And we will be back next week. And until then, love the Mets. Love the Mets.